another episode of The Critical Myth. This one is 542 for those who are keeping track at home. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and this, I think, may be the last of my Bronze Thumb updates. He has crossed the Pacific, and we do not yet know if he hit any sideways turbulence.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Just knock that stuff off right now. I am not getting through another show with all that innuendo. Anyway, I'm actually happy to have an old friend come back, and it's not Bronze Thumb.
No, sadly it is not, though. He apparently is finishing his whirlwind tour. There's some kayaking in his future, however. I may be wrong about that, though. All right, well, we are going to be talking about this week's genre news in this particular episode. But first, before we do any of that, Edmund, I believe you need to give a disclaimer.
I do, but first I would like to issue a small correction. In the midst of last week's celebrations of the life of Leonard Nimoy, I may have implied that he had some Canadian roots, and I was a little confused and mistaken. As we all know, thanks to Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song, Kirk and Spock may share a Jewish heritage, but I was conflating that and his Ukrainian roots and thinking for some reason he had connections to Montreal, which of course he does not, so I would like to apologize to the residents of the Boston area for moving Mr. Nimoy slightly north of the border. However, apparently I was just channeling all of those Canadians who have been Spockifying their $5 bills. So there is still that connection. Other than that,
I think that maybe the people in Boston have other things to worry about, like, you know, the 10 billion inches of snow that they happen to have. Oh, which, by the way, as we record, hi, Rob. Hi, Bobby. Wish I could be there. Anyway, keep going.
But that aside, I do have to warn everybody that our policy is to talk about just about anything we feel like with the news, with these episodes, when we get to them. So you will most likely be spoiled if you're not everything. But as far as the news goes, we are just trying to give you the good stuff. So this doesn't quite apply yet.
That's right. And well, we'll have to see whether or not the good stuff is what we would call everything that we're about to talk about. But I think the very first thing that we have on the list, Edmund, is in fact good news for some.
Yes, indeed.
For many of us, actually.
Yes. This is the premiere date for Orphan Black. It will be returning to BBC America on Saturday, April 18th at 9 p.m. So we have, what is that now, just about 6 weeks to wait before we can find out the latest adventures of the Clone Club and how they are going to deal with their new military male Clone Club. I am very much looking forward to this. I know this show has really been pushing the envelope in terms of its plotting, and we are all just praying it doesn't push it to the point of breaking. But so far I'm excited to see what they are going to come up with.
Yes, it should be very interesting to see just how the inclusion of a new set of clones changes things on Orphan Black. Gary, I think this next one is right up your alley because, number one, I think you're the only one who knows even anything about this particular series among the three of us. And I'm curious as to your take on their take.
I do have to admit I have a passing familiarity with it, but I by no means would consider myself an expert on this comic book series. However, you know, it does have very strong roots. What we're talking about is the show Lucifer, which has found its lead star. Welsh actor Tom Ellis has been cast as the Lord of Hell for the upcoming pilot on the DC comic. Now, this character was based out of a Neil Gaiman character from his Sandman series, for those familiar with that, to sort of give you at least a little flavor of the type of character to expect. He turned out to be so popular that, much like some of the other characters from the Sandman series, such as Death, spun off into their own books. We're still just in the pilot stage, though, so they haven't actually ordered the series, but they're hoping that Mr. Ellis will, you know, inspire popularity enough to cause that to happen. You might know him better as Dr. William Rush from last year's medical drama Rush, and also he was on the EastEnders show over in England. So he's not an unknown name, and I'm curious. In some ways, you know, a lot of these Neil Gaiman characters almost have a similar archetype where you start to look at, like, Constantine, where it's this sort of, you know, guy who's knowledgeable about things and almost feels like he's toying with people from time to time. And, you know, as such, the Lucifer character exhibits many of these same sorts of traits. So I'm curious how they're going to take him. He's not like a mustache twirling kind of evil, just sort of like, you know, bad things are going to happen, so he tries to take advantage of them. So I'm curious what tone they'll go with in the actual television show, because they don't always they don't always have to follow very close to the roots and be successful. You know, as we look at shows like Arrow, you know, they kept parts of the origin, but still, you know, refresh things to keep it popular with a new audience. So we'll see how they play around with this one.
Indeed, I suppose that we shall have to find out. It is odd that they're kind of separating this from what I guess you could say is the source material, but who knows? It might work out okay.
Well, it is being directed by, I believe, people associated with the Sleepy Hollow series.
Oh, so
we'll have to see. But yeah, it sounds like it's got enough provenance to give it a chance.
All right. Well, let's see. This next piece of information here, we have some news about the Spider-Man reboot. Now, okay. I think that almost killed Gary just bringing that up again. It would appear that the reboot film is going to be directed by Drew Goddard. Now, Goddard has been tapped to write and direct the latest Spider-Man movie. And what they're saying is that this is, get this, what is envisioned as a three-part series to come out over consecutive summers. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wait, that means like every year?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
The series might also be called Spectacular Spider-Man, because we have to have every variation of the Spider-Man comic titling on the films.
I was hoping for amazing.
So here's what they have to say as well. At least the site Latino Review, because I don't know, that's the one that they use as their source. So the thinking at the moment is that Sony will phase out all the Spideyverse films they were developing. Yes, even the Aunt May film, that was real.
Darn it!
I know. I was hoping that marriage to Dr. Octopus was going to happen, but what can you do? And focus on a story involving Spidey versus the Sinister Six. At one point, they were developing a film that was just going to be a spinoff called The Sinister Six. That's scrapped, but the big news is that the director of that film, Drew Goddard, will write and direct the Spectacular Spider-Man movie. Now, yes, that was this is interesting news, because it's implying that even though they're scrapping everything else that they had done, they're still somehow going to continue forward with Sinister Six as a concept for the next film, which doesn't quite make sense. But the fact that Drew Goddard is back in it, as some of you may recall, Drew Goddard was associated with this particular franchise at Sony and then left. So who knows if maybe this has drawn him back. Anyway, it also says that there won't be a new origin story. The new actor will be specifically based in high school and able to grow into the role, and that the first film will involve the Sinister Six, as we said before. A major part of the first film will involve Spider-Man fighting Iron Man and then trying to pass the audition to join the Avengers. This is all, of course, highly speculative, considering that the source is not what one would be considered to be official for Marvel or Sony, but hence is the rumor. Gary, you seem very excited by this.
Yuck. Where to start? The Sinister Six, you know, the reason that they're so sinister and that they sort of inspire somebody to go, oh, wow, because, you know, Spider-Man's had such a hard time fighting each one individually and, you know, has barely succeeded in fighting off even one of these people, to then have six all put together. But if you don't know that, they're really not going to be all that awe-inspiring to know that he has such long fabled histories with each individual person. So the sheer horror or dread that would occur when all six are attacking you or going after you at the same time just will lack any real depth or resonance, at least as far as I can imagine, without any history to back it up. And I've already...
Well, Gary, I don't know. If only there had been a film starring Spider-Man that had introduced some of those Sinister Six villains previously, that yes, they could then, you know, mine for this particular...
Sure was some background to them. That's true. And as far as the whole Civil War issue with Spider-Man, I've already said my piece, and even Marvel denies it now, so why would they bring it into the movies? Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Edmund, any thoughts on this, or do we just need to move on?
Oh, well, no, I mean, you brought up the point that was just running through my head. It's like, well, they've had five films, and they could have, and six villains to be introduced. It's, you know, it almost would make sense if you didn't keep rebooting everything. But anyway, in potentially better news, when Netflix was announcing all of their new series in recent months, there did seem to be one that was being left out, which particularly to the hosts of this show was getting a little annoying, but Netflix has now announced that Sense8, the new sci-fi thriller from J. Michael Straczynski and the Wachowskis, will make its Netflix debut on June the 5th. As previously reported, the series is going to be a gripping global tale of minds linked and souls hunted, with eight characters who are both empathically linked, giving them the ability to access each other's thoughts, feelings, and deepest secrets, and hunted by an organization that wants to learn more about this power through any means possible. Looks like it's an interesting cast of some people who are perhaps not as well known. They've all had decent credits, but aren't necessarily household names as the eight, but then in the supporting cast, we do have such names as Daryl Hannah, Naveen Andrews from that Island show, Freema Agyeman, and Terrence Mann. I've been looking forward to this, I discovered last weekend that as House of Cards goes along, it's not quite really binge watching worthy. However, I suspect, given my love of most things JMS, this quite possibly could be at the beginning of June there.
Yeah, of course, just as we mentioned for Daredevil, the likelihood is that we would string out at least our discussion of the show a little bit so that people will have an opportunity to stay on schedule, I guess you could say, or up to date. I don't know how you want to put that, but there we are. All right, so this next piece of news will be exciting for those who enjoy both the originals and Farscape. We have the news that the originals, the second half of the second season, is going to have none other than Claudia Black coming on to the show. Now let's see what it says here about who she might in fact be playing. It's not entirely clear here, but here we go. So Dahlia, which is a powerful witch and the maternal aunt of the Michelson siblings. So yes, returning as always with this particular family. It's not always in the body that you began with, but it is definitely continuing the penchant of this show to focus on the Michelson family drama. So I'm looking forward to that because Claudia Black always brings good value. At least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Gary, how about this next one? Oh, this seems like a good topic for us to turn to.
yes, I suppose so. As has been earlier reported, the Lego series will be continuing spinning off of the Lego movie with a Lego Batman movie. Will Arnett will continue to voice the character for the upcoming movie. And some people asked, since, you know, Batman was singing during the Lego Batman movie, during the Lego movie, if there'll be any more singing. And basically the supposedly tongue-in-cheek joke was that Batman will be exploring his inner life as a frustrated recording artist. So
seems legit.
It sounds farcical in its premise, and hopefully it'll be funny in its execution.
Yeah, one can only dream, right? I mean, this is exactly what I think we're looking for out of the Lego movies, is just lighthearted fun.
Yeah, I'm really not expecting any sort of Nolan-esque redo in Lego media for this movie. Yeah, I want over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek. I want the 1960s Batman TV show to look like a melodrama compared to what I will see in the Lego movie.
Your dream is likely to take place. So yes. There you go. All right. In completely different news. We've been perhaps wondering what does sci-fi have in mind for the spring, because, Lost Girl, its final season has been spooling out over on Canadian TV. of course. And for fans of Bitten, also that show has resumed its second season. But when are they going to show up on Sci-Fi? Well, we have a little bit more news about that. But first, you know, starting in March, they're going to be premiering on March 24th. Finally, we can explain where Bronze Thumb has been all this time and why he hasn't had time. Haunting Australia, an 8-part unscripted series featuring 6 of the best ghost hunters in the world. So, yeah, I'm sure that that means he'll be on that. In April, on the 2nd, Olympus, a 13-part mythological drama series, takes viewers into the action-packed world of humans, gods, and monsters, starring Matt Frewer. That's the only name I actually recognize here. So, yeah, this gripping series captures the dangerous courage of a few brave men and women who banished the gods to the realm of the unconscious, a place they called the Underworld or the Kingdom of Hades. I'm wondering if this is going to somehow be a take on that, what was that show that they were spinning off in, or that they were, running from Australia, the Almighty Johnsons or something like that. But anyway, Bitten's season 2 premiere will be Friday, April 17th, the second season, of course, with a special 2-hour premiere. So, werewolf goodness for those who enjoyed the first season. It's a 10-episode season, so I don't know if that means 2 episodes on the first night. The fact that they say a special 2-hour premiere versus a 2-hour or a 2-episode, I'm not sure what that means. I'm guessing it's just 2 episodes there. And of course, Lost Girl will be premiering its 5th and final season, at least the first 8 episodes of the 5th and final season, starting that same night, again, Friday, April 17th. Oh, and for those who are wondering, does this mean that unscripted television, or that scripted television, is going to be getting a lot of time and those Saturday sci-fi movies are gone? Of course not. On Saturday, April 25th, here we go. You ready for this? This is a mashup we were all waiting for, I'm sure. At least Kurt Batchelder was. Lake Placid versus Anaconda.
Oh, it's about time.
Killer crocodiles, giant anacondas clash in this thriller about corporate greed and science gone wrong. Of course. Okay, so that is apparently what Sci-Fi is releasing in the spring.
And well, I do just have to add on to that that they are continuing their casting goodness, since that movie will be starring Robert Englund, Yancey Butler, and Corin Nemec. They are still bringing it with the guest stars.
Hey, if you're going to go through all the effort to put something so epic on the airwaves, you might as well get a good cast.
Yes.
Okay. Speaking of putting some casting out there.
Absolutely. We have casting news for Independence Day 2. Jeff Goldblum has now been confirmed to officially be returning for Independence Day 2. No word yet on whether he'll be helping the cast find an apartment. In addition, Liam Hemsworth has also been added to the cast. And let's see, it's okay. There, yeah, his participation is confirmed and is just presumably reprising his role as the MIT computer expert whose magical mat can bring down spaceships. As far as Liam Hemsworth, we just know he's in the cast. We don't know what hunky bad boy he is going to be portraying.
Okay. Gary, while I'm still trying to wonder at the particular usage of certain terms about Liam Hemsworth, bring us into some other type of news. Maybe some other casting news, maybe, or something. I don't know.
Well, it's not really casting news, and I'll actually go a little bit more literal than the actual news piece does. But basically, what they're going to have is they're going to have a 5-part web series going behind the scenes of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's called Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Double Agent. And they're going to have someone who's going to stealthily go around the different sets and locales and offices to give us an inside view of behind the scenes of what goes on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This person is being directed by their leader called the Mastermind. and it's just, it gives us a chance to sort of see behind the scenes events going on, and maybe hints for upcoming episodes, as well as, you know, show off some of the gears and gadgets and things like that. And they're also going to be running, I believe, some sort of lottery is not the right word, but sort of like a contest for different prizes. So it should be interesting. You know, again, they're, you know, trying to merge, you know, different media outlets into one one set. I was hoping this would actually turn out to be an actual series, but again, it's sort of like, what does it remind me of? The Doctor Who Confidentials, I guess I'm imagining it's going to turn out something as, or where you just, you know, get more insight into each episode.
Well, even if it's not more scripted material, at least it's more something to show that they are continuing to support this, even though it is not getting the gangbuster ratings that everybody anticipated. Once again, confirming, at least in my mind, my theory that ratings really don't matter for this show at all.
Yeah. And also, given the amount of fun the cast seems to have, at least as evidenced by their live Twitter feed during the airings of the show, I have a feeling this could be a lot of fun, since I'm rather amused at this idea of a secret agent running around when they're releasing these press releases. So, yeah, I think Clark Gregg and Ming-Na and Brett Dalton and Chloe Bennett are going to have quite a bit of fun once they figure out who it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll just leave it at that. Let's see here. So many people are well aware of the fact that Star Wars Rebels just wrapped up its first season with some surprising new details and surprising new direction. So what's going to happen for season two? We don't know, but there is going to be a recurring role voiced by none other than Sarah Michelle Gellar. Yes, hours after the first season finale aired, the news broke that she would be joining in a mysterious new role. As they say here, we're thrilled to have Sarah Michelle Gellar on board for season two. She is a true Star Wars Rebels fan, and her passion undoubtedly comes through in the voice recording session. So obviously, the show is already well underway for the production of season two. Yeah, just pointing out here, of course, that the voice cast already includes her husband in a prominent role. Gary, any thoughts on that, or any suspicions? Perhaps?
Oh, I'm really hoping they're going with the obvious choice of being Princess Leia. We'll have to see, but that's my my hope. Given their disdain for any of the extended universe people, I wouldn't think it'd be Mara Jade, although that would be really nice too. So we'll have to see if they really go something totally obscure. Maybe Mon Mothma, maybe, but. We'll have to see. We'll talk about it either in this episode or another episode, but they pulled a real rabbit out of the hat with the finale. So I'm really optimistic that they'll go for the obvious choice of Princess Leia. So,
yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I mean, it certainly seems like what they're doing is they use the first season as kind of a set the expectations, but not, but then really changing up their direction for the second season. So it's curious to see where they're going to go from here. Gary, talking about some casting. This is what I was talking about before. I must have missed where we were on the list. It happens.
Oh, no problem. You had me confused. Anyway, yes. What would be the nice way to put it? I'll call it the Fox model of laying out superhero future, you know, super villains. They've continued to cast for the new Supergirl TV series with the actor Jeremy Gordon. He's been cast as Winslow Schott, a tech genius and superstar IT whiz, who's also going to work with Supergirl in, I guess I believe it was Catco, our last time we touched on the news for this said. And he's actually known as the villain as the Toy Man. So I'm curious whether this will be a pre-villain appearance, a la the way that Gotham's been rolling things out, or he's just going to, you know, basically origin and come out right from the beginning the way that, say, the Flash or the Arrows typically introduces villains. So, you know, this continues with some of the other casting news for characters, you know, such as the James Olsen casting, the Hank Henshaw casting. So it feels like they're building a nice universe. Toy Man is typically a Superman villain, oddly enough. They're not hesitant to dip closer to the big Kryptonian. So that's sort of interesting. So I'm glad that Superman properties aren't off limits, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting what kind of line they're going to have to walk with this one. But I still like the fact that they're using the producers that were behind or are behind Arrow and The Flash and potentially yet another spinoff on the CW. It's going to be weird if they have a show, though, that is kind of off on its own somewhere, not connected to the other three. But, you know, you never know. Maybe eventually they'll link up. Now, Gary, when I didn't put it on the news feed here because it's kind of hard to get into without actually being able to show the picture, but it is proliferating right now throughout the interwebs of the costume for Supergirl. And I'm just curious if you've seen it and what your thoughts are of it.
Proliferating? We're already figuring out how my daughter's going to do it for Dragon Con. Anyway. But yeah, no, I like it. It's somewhat of a classical look for her in some ways. The cape comes basically out around the neckline, which is fairly common for both, you know, silver and, I guess, as you'd say, modern age. It takes her V belt from the early 90s, I guess, and has a skirt, and then it has tights with very tall red boots. I like the whole look. I wish the S is the classic red S, but it lacks the yellow background, which I would have liked to see the yellow background. But given current Superman portrayals, I understand that that would go by the wayside. But overall, I think it's a nice mix. She still does have sort of, you know, a skirt about her to give you the girl effect, I guess you'd say, without trying to sound too sexist. And then, you know, she's got tights. I think it's a fairly practical outfit, and I like it. I think that the tights could have gone by the wayside to make the outfit appear a little bit more classic, but I realize they're trying to appeal to, you know, younger people who don't necessarily, you know, aren't steeped in the older Supergirl, or might not have even had exposure to her in general, really. I mean, as far as television goes or movies, it's been a long time since she's had any real substantial appearances. So for some, this might be one of the first looks at her. I can't say it exactly echoes Man of Steel, but you do have a sense of that flavor to it.
It does. It has a little bit of that kind of cross.
A little. It's a little less bright. I don't want to say dingy, but definitely a darker hue to it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about just the texturing. Looks very reminiscent of what's in Man of Steel.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at it right now. But you're right. It is kind of unusual with the stockings that going along with it. But I can kind of understand why, because of the shading that it kind of allows for in terms of the camera and whatnot. I'm sure I'll say this. This looks a lot more. This reminds me a lot of the kind of practicality that we see a bit in some of the other franchise offerings from the same producers.
Yes,
the first thought that I had was just, okay, this would easily fit the aesthetic of, you know, The Flash, for instance. It's not that far off. Well, let's see here. Well, Edmund, this is more up your alley, I think, in terms of casting news.
Yes, we have heard that on the upcoming season of Hannibal, Zachary Quinto will be making an appearance, apparently as a patient of Dr. Du Maurier's, although given the penchant of this series of patients getting pulled into Hannibal's orbit and having similar predilections, we can only hope that yes, it's something a little bit more significant. And I can report, even though he's not here, Bronze Thumb was very excited by this news since he heard posted the link to it on Facebook and with capital letters. And I think multiple exclamation points going, Siler meets Hannibal, Siler meets Hannibal, which was pretty much my reaction as well. So yeah, that's as always with Hannibal, that is about all we know, is that he's been cast and that, yes, he is apparently one of Gillian Anderson's patients. But we will just have to wait with bated breath till sometime later in the year, which I think we might be getting news on later in this very episode.
That's right, that's right. And now, will this be the actually chilling Siler from the first season or two of Heroes, or the kind of pathetic Siler from the later seasons?
I shall have to see. I'm sure for Brian Fuller doesn't really acknowledge the later seasons of Heroes. I'm sure he will be bringing back the...
I'm fairly sure of that too, yes. Now, Gary, I didn't want to put this up at the front because, I mean, we started last episode with some bad... some sad news for Star Trek fans, and I didn't want to double down on having a wake two weeks in a row for the beginning of our week. But I think we have some sad news about yet another passing in the classic Star Wars film franchise anyway.
Yes, we do. And while he won't generate the quite the emotional response that Leonard Nimoy did, And maybe some fans don't even realize his input into the Star Trek universe, and I'll bet you a lot don't. But the person we're talking about is Harv Bennett. He died this week. He was 84 years old. He had a very full life. Obviously, he has not been active lately. But for older fans, you'll know not only I'll talk about the Star Trek work that he did in a minute, but you can go back much further. You know, he is in some ways old time Hollywood. He ran Columbia Pictures for when they started their television run. He did the Salvage One show with Andy Griffith when they put together a rocket from spare parts to go up and get all the hardware off the moon and salvage it. He was the producer responsible for the $6 million man. He was actually the guy that did the voiceover for the beginning of it. You know, we're going to make him stronger, faster than before. That was his voice. So you've heard it dozens of times if you watched that show as a kid. And of course, also responsible for the Bionic Woman spinoff. And he also helped to actually create the television show Mod Squad. He has several other different movie and television producing credits over the years, but the one that we'll focus on for this was, of course, his guiding and helping to form Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Admittedly, the movie that saved the franchise and made all the resulting movies and spinoffs possible. If that movie had tanked, Star Trek probably would have been done. He actually came up with the idea for the script. He had never seen Star Trek before this, watched the whole show, and picked Khan as the villain to start. He was also the man who signed off, I believe, on having the Reliant have their nacelles upside down in a famous little sign-off glitch on the artwork. He not only guided Wrath of Khan, but he was also, you know, he was also responsible for guiding what is arguably the most financially successful Star Trek movie, Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. He and Leonard Nimoy came up with the script together to make that movie happen, and you know, he even made a guest appearance in I believe as an admiral in one of the Monster Maroon costumes for the movies. We owe Star Trek to this man. As popular as it is, people can say the internet saved it and everything like this. This was the guy who figured out how to tell a great story with Star Trek and make money with it. And that's why we had the multiple films that happened, the spinoffs of Next Generation. If we didn't have this man coming up with these ideas at, you know, and making it work, we would not have had, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We would not have had Next Generation. We would not have had Deep Space Nine. We would not have Voyager. We would not have had Enterprise. So while he's not going to get the critical acclaim that Leonard Nimoy does, nevertheless, he should be remembered for really as being the man that saved and brought Star Trek back to popularity again.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's if you just look at all the credits for the movies during the heyday of the film franchise, really not infamous so much as the trilogy of films that kind of defined for many people the Star Trek film franchise. His name is very prominent for a reason, and you know, he like you said, Gary, if you look at his career, you could almost say that you know, he and Glenn Larson were the ones who were responsible for a huge amount of the genre material that as children and teenagers we kind of enjoyed day after day. So another one who we've lost here, unfortunately. Edmund, this is just getting way too maudlin. I think we need some news that's going to maybe make us scratch our heads a little bit, but at least bring a smile to our face.
Absolutely. I will just quickly throw in, though, my two cents that as someone who was sitting in that audience in 1979 for Star Trek the Motion Picture after being so excited and then seeing it not quite come off, I am forever grateful to Harvey Bennett for coming in on two and pulling it out of the strange decision making that went into some of that original film and actually starting to make good, really good movies. Not the original one that doesn't have its moments, but God, there were moments that just kept going on and on and on. And that was not the case with two. But speaking of ongoing film franchises, we have news about Toy Story 4. It apparently will not be continuing the story from the original trilogy, which is, I think, quite a good thing for all those people who were thinking that those three films told a pretty complete story. And Pixar apparently agrees that it would have tertiary ties to the original trilogy, and is apparently going to be a romantic comedy, which is light on the human to toy interactions. So I guess it's going to be more the toys playing among themselves.
Okay, well, if it's a romantic comedy, I don't know about the toys playing with themselves, but okay. That's an odd direction for them to go, though, I think. Although I guess that means we won't cry when we're watching the movie. I'm guessing. Gary, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, they've ripped my hearts out enough after the last one that I'm glad that they're actually moving forward with a different story. I think they've comfortably exhausted that storyline, so I'm glad they're moving on to it. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind, too, that, you know, these guys have basically taken over Disney as far as animation goes. They've taken spots on the board and thrown their whole weight of their, you know, their creativity. But this the little Pixar area still continues to be the place where they can explore and do things that they don't necessarily do in other Disney movies. So, it's a very fertile ground for them. So hopefully I'm hoping they, you know, do break some new ground, either maybe not so much with special effects, but willing to take chances with odd storylines, and maybe this will be one of them.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And like you said, it's probably a good thing that they don't just go for ripping out the heartstrings quite so.
Well, you can't completely. Keep doing that every time and expect the same reaction. So
yeah, absolutely. So let's see here. We have then some other news about. Well, how do we want to put this? Movies going to TV, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just talking about icons from the 80s. here we go. If you've ever wanted to see some of those classic action shows from the 80s syndication market come back to life in the modern age, this is for you. The Expendables could very well be becoming a television event series for Fox. While series writer and action star Sylvester Stallone won't appear in the series, he'll serve as executive producer. All that means is that there are about a billion A, B, and C action stars from over the last 30 years that could easily show up on your small screen.
It's like the new Love Boat. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so I'm pointing out here at the end, it says this, just let's all remember, the Expendables franchise currently has three feature films under its belt with fourth, fifth, and female spinoff installments in development. Just someone out there remind me, how many Firefly films are there? Yeah.
Yeah.
As my heart continues to break, I need something that's going to really bring a smile to my face, or at least perhaps a little extra terror. Gary, maybe you can provide?
Dead. Yes. The Walking Dead, what you're talking about. They're going to be closing out their fifth season finale with an extra long episode. Is it 5 minutes long? Is it 10 minutes long? No, it's a full extra 30 minutes in length. This episode is going to air Sunday, March 29th, for that 90 minutes. So make sure you adjust your DVRs accordingly, just in case they want to try and chop off after an hour. Because to quote the synopsis, Daryl will find himself on the run. Meanwhile, Rick and the group continue to feel like outsiders out of the gate, outsiders while danger lurks outside of the gates, and it's called Conquer for the episode. Now, for those of us who have been cheating and reading ahead in the comic books, we might have a few ideas where this is going to go, and yes, it will be fun, so please watch the whole 90 minutes.
Oh, if it goes where I think it's going to go, it's going to be brutal. That's all I can say. But at any rate, I don't want to spoil for our friend here who is not,
yes,
conspicuously not spoiling himself because he wants to be the one lone voice of shock and awe.
Yes, exactly.
I guess you could say. I don't know.
Oh, I can't wait to get him's input.
I know.
Although once we get to talking about this latest episode, I think I'm getting a pretty good idea of where things might be going.
There's some stuff and things going on. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
There's one show we're not going to have to worry about spending any more time even thinking about. Edmund, if you can just bring us up to speed on this. Since you were the only one who was even trying to take this one for the team.
Yes, and hold on. Where? And in fact, it's...
Is it not opening at all?
No. This is very strange. It really was open, and then it apparently closed itself again, which is completely appropriate. But this is the news that NBC's Allegiance, their shameless attempt to rip off the Americans and steal all the people who weren't watching the Americans, has crashed and burned miserably and has already been canceled. And this wonderful and new NBC Thursday, will, rejiggered, and, they're going to move the slap from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, and, replace the slap with Dateline, The Real Blacklist. Since, as I've been discovering myself, as the episodes pile up on my DVR, as much as I love to watch James Spader chewing the scenery, the Blacklist has not really been holding my attention, so apparently they are going to try and give us real-life stories of charismatic criminals helping the FBI.
Okay. Interesting. Maybe they just need to have someone who likes to dine on human flesh be the one who's helping the authorities. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Maybe Hannibal. Just a thought. Yeah. Just maybe not. Okay. Well, we have one more piece of information, particularly regarding a certain cannibal of our mutual acquaintances.
Yes.
But first, American Ninja Warrior is returning on Monday, May 25th, for those of us who find that show to be unbelievably addictive to watch. America's Got Talent, unfortunately, is going to follow right in its footsteps, because it is going to be, after all, summer TV. Aquarius, a new show set in 1967 in the era of free love, drug experimentation, and Vietnam. It's going to star David Duchovny, as well as Claire Holt, who was Rebecca, the original Rebecca, anyway, on The Vampire Diaries and The Originals. And it's also going to have... that's the only person whose name I actually recognize here. So anyway, Aquarius, if you're really into, again, free love, drug experimentation, Vietnam, and small-time cult leaders, victimizing young women, that's your show. Because, of course, it's going to involve Charles Manson, I see here. Yeah, you can tell I really was interested in that before I started reading it. Anyway, it's going to lead up to the infamous Tate LaBianca murders. And finally, the news that actually everybody's been waiting for this article, and news that I'm sure Bronstum, whenever he gets around to actually rejoining us, will still be celebrating. Hannibal will be returning for its third season on Thursday, June 4th, which I'm just going to remind everyone who is freaking out that Hannibal's first season started in early June. This is not ridiculously late. Just saying. Anyway, yes, the third season is going to pick up after the shocking events of the season finale, with Hannibal on the run in Europe, accompanied by his psychiatrist, Dr. Marier. Anyway, sporting a new identity, but servicing the same insatiable appetite. That sounds great, Edmund. What do you think of that?
I can hardly wait.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, let's see. I think that's all that we had on our slate as far as news is concerned, unless we have any last minute nuggets here that I'm just going to very quickly check, but nope, that's all I can see here. I don't see anything new. Oh, well, this is actually perhaps interesting news, and I'm not sure that Gary had stepped away for a moment, but I'll go ahead and bring this up. Now, everybody knows that the novels are now, for Star Wars, considered to be fully canon, right? So an upcoming Star Wars novel is going to feature the first canonical LGBT character in the Star Wars universe. In Lords of the Sith, they are going to be introducing Moff Moores, an Imperial who has made some very serious mistakes, but she is an incredibly capable leader and spends much of the book working hard to prevent absolute failure. She also happens to be a lesbian. Odd way of particularly dropping that into the conversation, but... interesting, interesting. I guess it's nice for them to be, expanding a little bit on the variety and diversity in the Star Wars universe in this sense. So good for them. I'm still curious, though, as to whether or not they're really going to be doing anything in the novels just yet that is going to have any real impact on the Star Wars universe, since anything that comes out before Episode 7 is kind of just there as far as I can tell so far. But anyway, that was just something that popped up on my newsfeed as we were speaking. But I think that, Edmund, that's all that we have for this particular episode. Any last thoughts on the news? That sounds like a no. I'm just thinking.
Yeah, it is a no. And yes, since unfortunately, apparently my newsfeed is not as active and up to date as yours. So I really have nothing more to add. And looking forward to delving into some episodes next time.
That's right. And can we maybe hope that between now and then we don't, or next time or next week, we don't have any more people related to the Star Wars or Star Trek universe dying, please? Pretty please?
That would be nice.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.